This is Kathy bringing you the News Gazette for Friday, March the 27th. Of course, basketball is on the front page right now. And this headline reads, Illini in the NCAA Tournament, Elite Effort. I was a fan and I'm still a fan, by Joey Wright. From Houston, Brian Barnhart grew up listening to Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate call Illinois games on the radio. But one day, taking over Turpin's play-by-play role wasn't something Barnhart necessarily envisioned. I was a fan, Barnhart said. I just didn't expect it to ever be open, and I didn't ever plan to be back in Champaign again once I left for college. So I just figured that was never going to work. But to work with these guys, and most importantly, to become friends with them, that was unbelievable. But it worked out that way for Barnhart, a 1982 Unity graduate who has been the voice of Illini football and men's basketball since 2002. I tell people all the time, with my previous jobs, I had to learn about the history and what it's like, the culture of those teams, Barnhart said. Illinois, I didn't have to learn about it. I grew up with it. He didn't have any broadcasting experience at that point, beyond having listened to Turpin and Tate. I had no clue what I was doing, Barnhart said. Although I had listened to Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate for a lot of years, especially basketball, so I kind of knew what it was supposed to sound like, but I didn't know the mechanics of it. That led to minor league baseball stops in Lynchburg, Virginia, and Salem, Virginia after graduation, which preceded almost a decade as the play-by-play voice of the Oklahoma City 8ers-9ers and then the AAA affiliate of the Texas Rangers. He also called minor league hockey and low-level college basketball during his time in Oklahoma. One of my color guys at Oklahoma City was Chris Harrison, who wound up being the host of The Bachelor for a lot of years, Barnhart said. One of the guys that I had sit in with me in Oklahoma City when we played Louisville, their number two guy was Joe Buck, so I'd have him come and sit in with me and do innings together. Barnhart joined the Anaheim Angels radio booth in 1998 and spent the next two seasons there. It was an absolute blast, Barnhart said. It is a long season. If you do 30 spring training games, 162 regular season games, you meet a lot of interesting people. Our manager at the time was Terry Collins, who wound up managing the Mets. He was eventually fired in my second year, and then Joe Maddon took over. A job with the Montreal Expos fell through after Barnhart departed the Angels, which led to the chance to return home to Champaign. Stevie J hired him at WDWS shortly before Turpin retired from a long tenure as the voice of the Illini. I didn't expect to be back home, but it worked out that way, Barnhart said. My job was done in Anaheim, came home, started working at WDWS. Stevie offered me to read the news in the morning, and I hadn't done that since college. I thought, why not? I'll do it. Returning to Champaign brought things full circle for Barnhart, who had reserved the TV in the common area of his college dormitory to make sure Illinois games were on. Barnhart didn't miss an Illinois football game from 2002 until 2025, when he missed the Illinois game in Indiana due to his daughter's wedding. I was a fan, and I'm still a fan, Barnhart said. I just have a different job. He's made an impact with players and fans during more than two decades as the voice of the Illini. We have 15 guys in the locker room, but we have a large staff that surrounds us and is so influential to our success, Illinois forward Ben Humuchus said. Brian's been such a light for us, and obviously he's really incredible at what he does. Every time I get to do radio with him, it's cool. A.J. Redd got to do a post-game interview with Barnhart and Deion Thomas on March 3rd after scoring 5 points against Oregon in his final game at State Farm Center. He actually sent a copy to my dad, Redd said. My dad is an old school guy, so he still enjoys listening to the radio and the play-by-play that he does. And so that was a cool moment for me and my family. Barnhart also takes to Twitter, formerly known as X, prior to games to ask listeners where they're tuning in from. His post prior to Illinois' NCAA tournament win against VCU on March 21st quickly garnered more than 100 replies. I'm really deeply touched when listeners say they turn down the TV sound and listen to the radio because they want to hear our call, Barnhart said. It's a real privilege. People invite you into their living space and it makes it personal. And so I try to be their eyes and ears. I try to paint their picture for them. And Barnhart still keeps tabs on his alma mater, which he has advanced to IHSA state finals in football and boys basketball in the school year. I'm really proud of what they've done, the coaching staff and the players, Barnhart said. It's funny. How many years ago did I graduate? 40 plus years or whatever, and you still have that feeling when it's your high school and it's your team or it's your university, how strong that feeling is. Joy Wright is a reporter covering prep and college sports for the News Gazette and WDWS, WHMS, WKIO radio. This next headline reads, Champaign Healthcare, Carl and V.A. Ileana to partner on local clinic. All primary care services to be available at the Mattis Avenue facility, by Jana Wersma. It takes about 40 minutes to drive from Champaign-Urbana to the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System in Danville, according to Google Maps. Not a long drive to some, but it can be very cumbersome on a workday, said former Army Sergeant Garrett Anderson. I'm taking a half day off work just to go on to an appointment, said Anderson, who is the Assistant Director for Outreach and Engagement at the University of Illinois Shea Veterans Center. And for some veterans, they don't have the transportation, so they have to rely on the disabled American veterans. VA Ileana Healthcare System is developing a Champaign VA clinic in partnership with Carle Health, officials announced Thursday morning. The VA Ileana team will provide all primary care services at the facility, which will be located at 1702 South Mattis Avenue, Suite 101, and is expected to open this summer. Renovations are underway at the site, which is also home to Carle Neuroscience Institute, sleep medicine, and a new endoscopy center being developed by Carle and Christie Clinic. The new clinic will bring primary care services closer to where the veterans live and is a significant step in our commitment to serving the veteran community in Champaign, the VA Ileana spokesperson said. We often engage community partners to expand access to resources needed by our patients and the wider population we serve, said Caleb Miller, Senior Vice President for Carle Specialty and Ambulatory Care. The VA is uniquely qualified to provide clinical care for veterans, and we're proud to support the VA as they address the issues impacting their patients' health and well-being. VA Ileana serves more than 29,000 veterans in a 34-county area spanning central Illinois and west central Indiana, per the health system's website. In addition to the Danville Medical Center, the system also includes 5 community-based outpatient clinics in Bloomington, Decatur, Mattoon, Peoria, and Springfield. Danville's regional area is quite large, so people have to travel quite far, but having a clinic in Champaign is quite convenient for the local veterans or even the Collar counties, Anderson said. He added that the Shave Veterans Center works with a large military population at the U of I, and the new clinic will be a good resource for those individuals when they need care. Former Marine Ray Elliott also thinks that the new clinic in Champaign is a good idea since it's a central location for East Central Illinois. I think it's absolutely crucial to have more coverage for the veterans, said Elliott, who serves on the board of the VFW Post 630 and is also involved with a Richard L. Pittman Marine Corps League Detachment 1231. We've got to start taking better care, and we don't take bad care necessarily now, but I'd like to see that available here because there are a lot of veterans in this area. From Capital News, Illinois, Bill Overhauling Higher Ed Funding Clears Committee by Peter Hancock. A bill that would overhaul the way Illinois funds its public universities advanced out of a House committee Thursday and could face a vote by the full House soon, despite continued opposition from the University of Illinois system, the state's flagship institution. House Bill 1581, titled the Adequate and Equitable Public University Funding Act, would establish a needs-based formula for distributing new funding for universities similar to the evidence-based funding mechanism that has been used at all the K-12 level since 2018. It calls for increasing university funding in Illinois by about $135 million each year over the next 15 years. That new funding would be distributed under a formula that sets an adequacy target for each institution and gives priority for new funding to those institutions furthest away from their target. Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat of Urbana, the bill's lead House sponsor, said funding for the plan would be subject to legislative appropriations each year, while House Bill 1581 merely establishes a policy under which the new money would be distributed. The purpose of this is to establish a funding formula that gives us a baseline that will allow us to build an adequate system for the future, she told the committee. This process looks at real consequences, real students, real institutions, some of which are so far from adequacy at 40% to 43% funded from the state. The proposal came from a commission lawmakers established in 2021 to develop a new funding system for state universities, some of which were nearly decimated and financially by the two-year budget impasse that ran from 2015 to 2017 during former Gov. Bruce Rauner's administration. Public universities generally have three main sources of revenue for their day-to-day operations: state funding, student tuition and fees, and federal funding. Many also have sizable endowment funds that receive charitable donations from alumni and other philanthropists, but those funds are usually restricted for specific purposes. In Illinois, as in most states, state funding used to make up the largest single source of a university's total funding, followed by tuition and fees. Federal funds, not including student financial aid such as Pell Grants, typically account for only about 10 to 12% of a university's total revenue. But since the 1980s, according to the National Center for Education Statistics, as higher education costs have risen, states have not kept pace, forcing universities to rely more heavily on tuition and fees. Jay Gattrell, president of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, told the committee that trend has had a disproportionate impact on smaller regional universities compared to larger flagship universities. The reality is that regional public universities serve a significantly greater proportion of the low-income first-generation and underserved students than the nation's flagship campuses do, he said. For that reason, higher education funding like the K-12 model should account for these disparities. According to the estimates provided to the committee, if the proposed formula were being used today, EIU would be ranked as one of the neediest universities in the state, with funding currently at only 49% of its adequacy target. Only Western Illinois University in Macomb at 48% would rank lower. The University of Illinois' Urbana-Champaign campus, currently at 89% of its adequacy target, is considered the most adequately funded school under the proposed model and would therefore be the last in line for new funding. Nicholas Jones, Executive Vice President for the U of I system, which also includes campuses in Chicago and Springfield, said that would be unfair to an institution that serves 53% of all public university students in Illinois. Equity and adequacy are shared goals, but the proposed equitable funding legislation does not achieve equity or adequacy, he said. Instead, it redistributes resources in a ways that under-resource the state's strongest public universities, those that drive Illinois' workforce development, anchor the research enterprise, and empower economic competitiveness. The bill passed the House committee that deals with higher education appropriations by a vote of 12-4. The vote came as House members were working hard to meet a Friday deadline for House bills to pass out of committees. As that deadline approached, many bills passed out of various committees with the verbal understanding that they would be brought back for further amendments before being voted on by the full House. Ammon says she expects no further substantive amendments to the higher education funding bill, adding, "But I'm open to talk to anyone who wants to talk to me." Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with, on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing us. After working at Poor Brothers for the last few years, bartender Taryn Burns is treading new ground at the recently opened Boxcar. While the location is familiar as the former Ice House, Burns said the Boxcar is pretty unique to the area as a tiki bar. It's kind of flashy, very boozy drinks, and there's not a lot of places that do tiki and do it well in Champaign or in the area in general, she said. When you walk in, you get that nice neighborhood bar feel, but you can be a little fancy with it. All told, Burns has been a bartender for over 20 years. She has done other work, but just keeps coming back to the bar scene. I like to be around people. I like to create cocktails and see how excited people get about it. The smiles on their faces when you make the perfect cocktail just for them will always be a high for me, she said. And all the while she's there for those people's highs and lows, Burns said. Out of the tiki drinks, her favorite drink to fix up is a sidecar, which she dresses up with a bit of tobacco bitters. If you ever visit the Boxcar and see her smiling while Shania Twain's Man I Feel Like a Woman plays, just know that her co-worker Drew Garski is playing their favorite inside joke on her. It could be deadpan quiet in here and all of a sudden you hear, "Let's go, girls!" It makes my day every frickin' day, Burns said. The boxcar has been open for a couple of months, but still has proper opening celebration in the works. Byrne said the date hasn't been chosen yet, but it should be. And says, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, email Jim Rosso at jrosso@newsgazette.com. And more local news from Danville. Community Impact Awards, $180,000 in grants handed out to 31 organizations by Jennifer Bailey. The Adjust Your Vision Young Girls Empowerment Program doesn't have a home yet, but the president and CEO, Lolita King, wants to create a caring environment for up to 10 teenage girls and young ladies who are wards of the state and in foster care. We are seeking a home, and this award will help us with it, King said of her $5,000 grant at Thursday's Community Impact Awards presentation. Her organization was one of a record 31 recipients of grants intended for groups that benefit local youth at this year's awards, presented once again at the Fisher Theater in downtown Danville. The grants are made possible due to the support of Balloons Over Vermilion and the Festival of Trees through sponsors, committees, volunteers, guests, and community members. Over the last 9 years, they've given out $865,000 in grants to local organizations. Also at Thursday's ceremony, the 2026 Balloons Over Vermilion student ambassadors were introduced as part of the kickoff for the 10th Annual Festival and upcoming 30th presentation of the Festival of Trees in November. Libby Torbett and Kylie Scherer's fourth grade classes at Salt Fork North Elementary School are the next ambassadors for the hot air balloon event that will be hosted at a new location this year, Kennecook County Park, in June. This year's $180,000 grants went to 8 Vermilion County libraries, youth food programs, youth hockey, the Danville Family YMCA, Sleep and Heavenly Peace, Northridge Builders Club, Rossville Circle Academy, and other organizations in amounts ranging from $1,500 to $13,000 for OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. When one of the new recipients is Adjust Your Vision, named after a nickname for King's late son, Adrian, a faith-driven initiative that provides holistic support to girls ages 13 to 21 who are currently in or have transitioned through the foster care system in Vermilion County. The young girls often face significant emotional trauma, instability, and lack of supportive networks, according to the officials from Balloons Over Vermilion and the Festival of Trees. This program exists to fill those gaps with compassion, structure, and purpose, focusing on life skill development, mentorship, spiritual guidance, and practical assistance. It's meant to meet their immediate needs and instill long-term confidence, self-worth, and direction. The program's future goals include expanding housing options and services, ultimately creating a staffed group home environment. And there is a picture of, looks like it's Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus, and I see Christmas trees. Lolita King, president and CEO of the Adjust Your Vision program, which aims to help girls ages 13 to 21 or who have been through the foster care system in Vermilion County, is accepting the $5,000 grant at Thursday's Community Impact Awards at the Fisher Theater in downtown Danville. And then there's a group of young kids standing behind a sign. Fourth graders from Libby Torbett and Kylie Shearer's classes at Catlin's Salt Fork North Elementary pose with a banner, announcing them as the next student ambassadors for June's Balloons Over Vermilion Festival, which is moving to Kennecook County Park. More than 150 bills clear committee. Measure on junk fees, child torture, and tipped wages among them by Jenna Swikert, Ben Zielinski, Peter Hancock, and Jerry Nowicki. The Illinois House passed more than 150 bills out of committee from Tuesday to Wednesday as it worked toward a Friday deadline to move legislation to the full House. The measures included a ban on junk fees, classification of child torture as a Class X felony, a retry at a nonprofit savings bill the governor recently vetoed, and a bill to strip the city of Chicago's authority to alter the minimum wage for workers who earn tips. All of the measures passed this week are still a long way from final passage, requiring approval from both chambers and the governor before they can become law. Tipped minimum wage. Lawmakers considered a bill that would end Chicago's tipped minimum wage ordinance, ultimately passing it in committee despite opposition from some Democrats. House Bill 4623 would give the state exclusive regulatory power over allowance for tips as part of hourly wages, ending home rule authority on that issue. The bill would overturn a 2023 Chicago ordinance that gradually phases out the city's tipped minimum wage, which allows employers to pay tipped workers an amount lower than the standard minimum wage if the rest is made up in tips. The city council, however, recently passed an ordinance pausing this year's scheduled increase, but on Wednesday, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson vetoed that measure. When Illinois passed its current minimum wage law in 2019, it maintained a provision that allowed employers to pay tipped workers 60% of the minimum wage, which is currently $15 an hour. The restaurant industry lobbied for limiting home rule authority during the passage of the 2019 law to no avail. Bill sponsor, State Representative Curtis Tarver, Democrat of Chicago, said he brought the bill to keep tipped minimum wage laws uniform statewide. His bill does not prevent municipalities from having higher minimum wages than the state. Having 200-plus homeroom municipalities, it doesn't take a ton of sense for someone to get the home rule and have one set of goals and then to cross over to another municipality with other rules, Tarver said. Proponents of the bill limiting home authority argued that the tipped minimum wage helps keep costs down. Eliminating it could lead to restaurant closures across Chicago, they said. Opponents generally argued that the legislature couldn't encroach on home rule powers and tipped workers in Chicago deserve the raise. The bill passed 22-4 with four Democrats from the Chicago area voting in opposition. Junk fees. The House Consumer Protection Committee passed a bill to ban junk fees or hidden charges that are placed on bills but not otherwise posted or advertised. House Bill 228 would make it a violation of the existing Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act for a company to post a price that does not include all mandatory fees and surcharges. It also mandates that prices and fees must be clearly disclosed prior to checkout. This is the third time the committee has considered a bill to ban junk fees, but none have become law. At a time when working people are already struggling with rising costs, hidden fees that appear at checkout make it even harder to budget and compare prices, Economic Security Illinois Action said in a statement. Banning hidden junk fees and requiring companies to show the full price up front is a simple common sense reform that will bring fairness to our marketplace and protect working families from corporate greed. Child torture offense, Democratic lawmakers could take the rare step of adding a new criminal penalty to state law. A House Criminal Judiciary Committee passed House Bill 5562 unanimously on Tuesday, which would create the offense of child torture in state law. Democrats have typically shied away from bills that create newer, tougher criminal penalties. State Representative Michelle Mussman, Democrat of Schaumburg, who sponsored the bill, said it was inspired by a 2019 American Bar Association resolution calling on states to define child torture in their laws. The bill would apply to cases of physical and emotional abuse that create, increase, or prolong the pain, suffering, and agony of a child. The offense would be charged as a Class X felony, the most serious in Illinois. Mussman said the bill is important because torture may not necessarily manifest as physical abuse that results in great bodily harm, but still has a tremendous impact on a child's physical, mental, and emotional health. Some Democrats say they were concerned the bill was too broad and encouraged Mussman to craft an amendment outlining more specific cases that would be considered torture. Child torture is wrong and terrible, and we have a responsibility, I think, to be very cautious about when we create new Class X felonies because of the severity of that sentence, that the conduct that could be sentenced to Class X should be the most egregious conduct that there is, said State Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat of Chicago. Nonprofit Investment Fund. This is a bill that would allow the state treasurer to establish a special investment fund for Illinois nonprofit corporations, and it advanced in both chambers of the General Assembly on Wednesday. The proposal is a revised version of one that State Treasurer Michael Frerichs pushed in 2025. It would operate much like Illinois Funds, the pooled investment fund the Treasurer's Office operates for state agencies and municipalities. This investment pool will allow our nonprofits to invest their money in a fund that will generate substantial interest and have a meaningful impact on their operations, Frerichs told a Senate committee. Governor J.B. Pritzker vetoed the bill last year, saying it could have the unintended consequence of benefiting fringe and extremist organizations that organize as nonprofits. The revised bill would limit the types of organizations that could qualify to participate in the investment pool to include Medicaid-certified healthcare providers, organizations previously certified to receive state grants, federally registered labor organizations, and organizations whose missions fall within specified categories, such as neighborhood development, affordable housing, or services for military veterans. It will also exclude organizations that are on certain suspension, debarment, or stop payment lists for the state or federal government. And this is called the Crime Report. The News Gazette reporter Luke Taylor assembles a bulletin of recent criminal activity reported by area police agencies. In Champaign, in the 100 block of East University Avenue, a man threatened victims with a screwdriver and damaged property at 10:31 p.m. March 18th. In the 900 block of Crescent Drive, police took a report of a stolen vehicle at 12:53. On March 19th, in the 100 block of East University Avenue, a sex offender was arrested for failure to register at 8:24 a.m. March 19th. In the 2000 block of North Neal Street, a juvenile set fire to a planter in the mall at 6:57 p.m. University Avenue and Randolph Street. During a traffic stop, a weapon and cannabis were found in a vehicle at 7:44 p.m. on March 19th. Walnut Street and Main Street. An arrest was made for driving under the influence at 11:34 p.m. on the 20th. Mattis Avenue and Bloomington Road. An arrest was made for driving under the influence at 1:18 a.m. Saturday. Hagen Street and Bloomington Road. An arrest was made for driving under the influence at 4:02 a.m. Saturday. Castleton Drive and Brentwood Drive. A woman was battered by a group of unknown suspects at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday. In the 400 block of West University Avenue, police took a report of a robbery and the theft of a vehicle at 1 a.m. on Sunday. In the 500 block of Edgebrook Drive, police took a report of a brick being thrown through the victim's window at 4:30 p.m. Sunday. In the 4800 block of Windsor Road, a suspect was arrested on a warrant and was found to be in possession of narcotics at 10:47 a.m. Monday. In Urbana, 600 block of University Avenue, a man who was involuntarily admitted at a local hospital battered a security employee at 3:24 a.m. on the 19th. In the 800 block of Oakland Avenue, an unknown offender discharged a firearm in an apartment complex and was overheard by residents and a sheriff's deputy at 12:45 a.m. On March 20th, in the 900 block of Colorado Avenue, an unknown offender stole a vehicle, which was later recovered and returned to the victim at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. Cunningham Avenue and Kerr Avenue, a man committed multiple vehicle violations and was found to be driving under the influence at 1:09 a.m. Sunday. And in the 1900 block of Cunningham Avenue, a woman committed a sex act in exchange for a service and was charged with prostitution at 10 p.m. on Sunday. Some area history. In 1926, John H. Thornburn purchased the Kankakee and Urbana Traction Company's holdings for $119,000 at a foreclosure sale to satisfy a court judgment in his favor. The holdings include 8 city lots in Rantoul and a 60-foot-wide right-of-way between Urbana and Paxton. Thornburn stated that he intends to stop operating the rail line, agitating local farmers who will suffer severe financial loss if the line is abandoned. In response to numerous petitions, Thornburn agreed to wait a while before liquidating the holdings to see if any potential operators will step up. In 1976, campus bars are running out of Budweiser, are already out of Michelobes, and by Sunday will be out of Busch because of the strike against the Anheuser-Busch of St. Louis. In 2011, about 75 Danville school staff and future and retired teachers from across the state joined forces to give Cannon Elementary School a much-needed makeover and its students a deeper sense of pride in their school. The group spent the better day part of the day giving the foyer, hallways, stairwells, cafeteria, and the office of the 87-year-old building a paint job as part of the Illinois Education Association Students Program's first large-scale outreach to teach community service project. And that's all we have for today. I'll be right back with the second half of the News Gazette.